Hello everyone, welcome to LTV Talks. Today I am very excited to be joined by Karan, Karan Gupta, and he's currently the Global Head of CRM at Marley Spoons. And I'm very interested in talking to him because he has super diverse experience and dense experience in CRM and MarTech in general for the last 13 plus years. He has worked with some hypergrowth tech startups and entrepreneurial ventures across three continents. So Karan, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. And I think it's always interesting that I'm talking to someone who can pronounce my name right, which is always a good start, I guess.
No, but Karan, you have such cool experience, and you know, you're of course working in Marley Spoon right now, but you know, just looking at your profile, I see so many great roles and so many sort of headline things that you drove at those roles, right, as well. Do you mind giving us a brief intro and your background on how you got where you are right now?
Absolutely. I'll try my best because I don't think, like, when I started my journey, I had this, let's say, intent to move in this direction. And also, I guess this marketing tech ecosystem is still fairly new. And but putting that in context, right? So I grew up in India. My background is of that of an engineer, and went to business school in the US. And that sort of put me in this trajectory of moving into this, let's say, environment of marketing. So I was always very interested in marketing. And had this background of, let's say, working as an analyst before. So I was interested in numbers. And then when you grow up in India, I think naturally you start, I think, thinking like a growth hacker. So I think all of those elements sort of positioned me into this environment. And what I was doing back in the day, so I was leading growth teams around the world, also took a pit stop in the UK where I did another master's in digital marketing. Since I remember back in 2015, that was becoming a buzzword around growth marketing. So all of these experiences, since I don't come from, let's say, a traditional marketing background or a traditional performance marketing background, I sort of thought of, or rather leveraged all of these experiences into getting into this marketing tech environment. And that's how I also, let's say, sort of fell into this CRM world, because I think there's this simple you know, perspective that, of course, acquiring customers is easy, relatively easy, let's say, but retaining them is hard. That's how I fell into this land of CRM, which I think historically was often thought of as a channel. But basically, at the heart of it now, it's about how do you engage customers. And how do you retain them at scale? That sort of triggered this journey of learning how CRM is done. And to me, it's still a learning experience, right? That's what I'm doing right now at Marley Spoon as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, not only our names are similar, I think our trajectory of just like how we have evolved has also been very similar now that I hear it. Because I'm also an engineer, and you know, coming from like a background where I was thinking of marketing, I don't know why CRM attracts Indians or Karans in general, but there seems to be a trend there. And you know, I've you were at Grover as well, right? And Grover was or is still quite an innovation in its own in terms of how they, you know, how they tackle customer needs. Grover, for anyone who might not know, is a service where you can rent new tech. So you know, if you wanted to buy an iPhone, but you're sure it, you know, it's just a craze of the moment, you can rent it out and use that equipment. Or there is another use case where, you know, you want to get a very good equipment in terms of photography or videography or things like that, or the drone, and you could do that on a rent basis rather than buying it or buying a very expensive piece of equipment. And you were heading CRM and retention there, right?
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, you nailed it, right? Like, it's a very interesting concept where it's around this whole environment of circular economy. So the multiple use cases around when people don't want to buy it and they either want to test a product, let's say the latest iPhone, or they're traveling around and they just want to rent a drone for a couple of months. So it gives flexibility, plus it also reduces, let's say, waste in that sense. And my journey with Grover was interesting because it actually gave me a hands-on experience of how CRM could be a growth engine. Because putting that in perspective, when I joined Grover, and back then, this is early, mid-2019, they were, I think, when I joined, less than 90 people. Now they are more than 500 people. They are a unicorn. So CRM was basically all about sending newsletters left, right, and center. So that was basically at heart what CRM was focusing on. So as you can imagine, it wasn't really a growth function. By the time I left, so CRM had become like a core growth driver to the organization, where we had set up multiple channels. It was all about, let's say, learning into customer behaviors, not just from a research perspective, but how you can basically activate that data. So imagine again a simple scenario that, let's say, although our names are similar, but maybe let's say I am a gamer and I am, let's say, just looking to get a Nintendo Switch to survive the brutal winter of brutal winter of Berlin. Whereas you, Karan, let's say you are just all about the latest iPhones. And every time a new iPhone is released, you're one of those that who would basically, rent that product. Imagine two very different customers, and if you don't understand this customer behavior, of course you can't retain this customer, you can't increase basket size, you can't increase lifetime value. So again, of course the tooling is a critical piece, but it was all about at Grover that how, as you start understanding these behaviors, how can you, let's say, upsell to a person like me, whether if I'm looking for a Nintendo Switch and it's out of stock or it goes on discount, how can I highlight those features to me and to you, for example, when the latest iPhone is released? So ensuring that you are in the loop, ensuring that those features are used in terms of highlighting to you, especially in ensuring that you keep renting from Grover, for example.
Absolutely. And honestly, that's what I like about your profile as well, because you've throughout your career in CRM, you have this two things that pop up for me. One is how you integrate data into not only integrate data from a technical perspective, but also using that data creatively to use in CRM channels. I think you have a very solid role there across Grover and across Marley Spoon, and we'll come to that in a bit as well. But then also, for example, you have in both these roles, you have been scaling CRM teams, which I find very interesting. I was at HelloFresh, in the start of my career, and it was kind of similar, where we started as a 6-people CRM team, and by the time we were leaving, the CRM team itself was around 35 people, or 30 people. So, being part of that process, I do understand how hard it is to scale a CRM team. So going back to your Grover example, right? Like how, when you entered Grover, how did the team structure look like? And because I remember you talking about how at that point in time when you joined, CRM was still used as a dispatch center. Let's say they were doing newsletters and basics of CRM. So how did the team structure look like at that point? And like, how did it evolve? If you can walk us through that journey of how did you, manage to bring it to a level where CRM was more about multi-channel, more about personalization. I know it's a lot to us to condense all of that, but maybe, if you walk through it in terms of like the team structure maybe and the process in general.
Yeah, I mean, so let's take it this way, right? So if you think about it simply, that when I joined Grover, the role of CRM was just about newsletters, so you don't need a team. And that's also the mindset that, was there in the organization, that you basically just need one person. And, that was initially what I was doing. So I was basically doing everything on my own. And you see that trend with some brands in general, where their CRM teams is either just one person running the show, or they have huge teams. Like you mentioned, like, you know, HelloFresh is an example, Cloud9 is an example, Marlyspoon also is an example where we have big teams. But when I joined Grover, it was just, you know, me running everything, which I think was interesting because it gave me a very hands-on view of how, you know, CRM should be. Now, this is where it's an interesting topic because while the tooling is important, because if you don't have the right tools, of course, it's hard to scale CRM. But you have to balance it with commercial goals where you have to highlight, you know, what CRM can deliver on. So putting that in perspective, right? So we had MailChimp back in the day. And for anyone familiar with MailChimp, it's let's say, you know, an interesting tool when it comes to, you know, building emails. And for that purpose, I think it was a fairly decent tool. So that's what we were doing, right? So we were using MailChimp to send newsletters to everyone. And we had Intercom, which is of course a customer, let's say customer care tool. But it, like, as you would also understand this marketing tech ecosystem, a lot of these tools allow for a lot of different things. And everyone, I think, is trying to build this all-inclusive solution, which can do everything. And I think Intercom, I don't know now where Intercom sits, but back in the day, Intercom was also letting you send, let's say, push notifications and so on. So what I started doing was, let's say, before I could convince the senior leadership that we needed, let's say, an omni-channel orchestration tool, I started, again, putting on my growth hacking hat, testing some cart abandonment flows through Intercom. And this is where you also need to get a buy-in from, let's say, BI and product and so on to create some of these, let's say, quick tests using the tooling you have. And of course, it wasn't, as you can imagine, right, it wasn't a very scalable solution. But even by running a few, let's say, cart abandonment tests on Intercom, we were able to, you know, figure out that there is an uplift, right? And that helped me basically justify the case of getting a more scalable tool like Brazen, through which you know, we were able to then start the omni-channel orchestration piece. So that was, I would say, one angle. And then it's also about understanding, let's say, from your own tech stack, what is the more critical gap? And that's where you know, we started, let's say, adding more layers to this omni-channel orchestration. Because with Braze, of course, you know, once you start orchestrating different channels, it's very easy to then, you know, create uplift and justify that. And to me, then the missing part was, how can you do that at scale? This is where we added Amplitude to the stack, which meant that, especially, you know, for e-commerce, if you look at Black Friday, which is, you know, a crazy season, with Amplitude, we could amplify this audience building. And basically create a significant uplift on all our, you know, retention metrics. And this then, of course, gets a deeper buy-in to all other tools you need to basically run your CRM team in a more scalable way. This also paved the path for me to hire a team. And it was, of course, a very lean team where it was a couple of CRM managers, one focusing on lifecycle campaigns, one focusing on one-off. And then basically to support the team, we had one marketing tech specialist and an analyst as well. And with this lean setup, you know, we were able to not just create this huge amplification on commercial targets, which of course is needed. And it also showcases how CRM is not just a support function, which is used to be back in the day, and how it's a critical growth driver to organization. And that's how I went about, let's say, you know, building this team and showcasing how CRM can have this seat in as a growth function in the journey of, let's say, a unicorn like Grover.
Absolutely. I think it's super interesting what you said, right? Like, if we summarize it, it's essentially you start with the biggest impact pieces, right? Like, you start building a case almost for CRM through very quick tests that also maybe doesn't need a convincing of like product or engineering. It's super quick for them. It's super quick for you. It drives impact. You can show some results to get the foot in the door, so to say. And then slowly build your case on, okay, if we do it in a better way, like if we personalize, if we segment better, we are going to drive even more results. And that gets the conversation going around building a case for CRM in such companies, right? It's super interesting. And especially, I think what you mentioned around Black Friday, talking more tactically, was also something I was very interested in, because you mentioned, I think, just pulling from like the research I did on you, there was a 50% increase in activation rate, around 140% increase in upsells. And also you had a very good reactivation rate increase of around 80%. So when we talk about all these lifecycle stages and the uplifts there, especially on tentpole events like Black Friday, right? Do you still attribute those gains to better segmentation, or was it because Black Friday is super crowded, right? Or such events are super crowded in terms of how many brands target you in, during those days. So what do you attribute those sort of uplifts to, was it just because we started doing these things that you saw these results, or was it something else as well?
Yeah, so I think the way I look at it is more around the uplift part, right? So it's keeping everything else equal. So of course, there's an increase in traffic, there's an increase in intent, this uplift that we're talking about is not just over let's say any other period, but it's comparing basically, let's say, Black Friday over last year. So again, of course, you'll have a smaller base sometimes, but to me, if I just compare, let's say, a similar high intent, high peak period like Black Friday year over year, that's where we could see this uplift. And this uplift, I would say, is principally driven by not just better segmentation, but better activation. So the more you can not only unlock that customer behavior, but act on it. So again, if you take, let's say, Grover as a simple example, right? So while we can, you combine tools like Braze and Amplitude. With Braze, you have the power of reaching, let's say, customers at the right channel. And with Amplitude, you can then identify those high value actions. So again, like, let's take a simple e-commerce example, right? So both of us are looking, we are shoppers. I basically am just looking for the best deal. So I come and I make a purchase. And then with Amplitude, you can identify certain behaviors that maybe for you, they realize that, you are looking for a certain product, but that product has already gone out of stock. And now you're not making a purchase, right? So how do we, and we might have, let's say in e-commerce, you might have certain products which is limited in stock. And then if they give that product to me, I mean, it might not make much sense, right? Because I'm already buying something, but we can identify this behavior about you that if you don't get this particular product, you're not going to make a purchase. So might as well, let's say, send that product your way, maybe a push notification and say, hey, limited stock, create an urgency and, get you to make that purchase. So this is how that uplift happened, right? Like, because we could identify those different behaviors. And then we could make sure that we are, reaching out to customers with very personalized offering and ensuring that we are, of course, leveraging that Black Friday, urgency and intent to unlock this uplift. So that's, the key thing which created this particular uplift if we compare it to just, let's say, Black Friday over last year.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I see your point, right? And as well, I think, to not only get that data, but to be able to use it is actually the heart of personalization, right? Like if you think about, I was just at a talk yesterday with someone from Runtastic, and they were talking about how they were using, for example, when you get into the app, it's a running and other, you can track different exercises with this app. If you get into the app and you have, let's say they were looking at activity length time, to flag what kind of user you were. So for example, if I would start a run and then I just finish my runs in less than 20 minutes or 10 minutes maybe, based on that, they were flagging someone as this person is a beginner or this person is intermediate or whatever, irrespective of what they said in their onboarding. And that was a key to, you know, to increasing their understanding of the user, but also serving them more personalized content in terms of their, you know, once, let's say I finished a run in less than 15 minutes and that's what I'm doing, then they know that they are going to suggest me a plan which is very beginner oriented. And I thought that was the personalization that brands need, right? Like if you can use that, not only you have this data available, but if you can use this data in a, in an effective way, such as this one, then you would always see good results coming your way in terms of engagement and purchases in your case.
But that is, I think, like the hardest piece, right? So I'll put this in perspective to how we also do this at Marley Spoon. So again, I always think of it again in those three pillars of marketing tech, where in the first pillar, of course, you know, you need to start collecting that first party data across all your data silos. And in our case, of course, that was the hardest part because we had different brands, different tech stacks. There was also, let's say, a brand we had acquired in Australia, which was sitting in a totally different silo. So the first piece, of course, is, you know, how you can basically collect data from all of those touch points across all, you know, apps, websites, any other source that you might have. The second, of course, you know, piece to this is that data activation layer, where you might have, you know, let's say an orchestration tool like Braze, we use Iterable, where you can start, you know, using that data around customers to reach out to them. The third, which is absolutely, I think, the I always, you know, call it, let's say, the brain to this orchestration, where you can start applying a personalization layer. And to your point, absolutely, this is not a linear flow, right? Like you would have these three layers, but then everything you capture, not just on the orchestration layer and the personalization layer, you need to keep feeding that back in. So you need to create a feedback loop that the more data you collect, the more personalization you do. You need to, of course, feed that back into your first layer, which is where you're capturing all that data so that it again flows into your orchestration. And to me, that is, of course, you know, the hardest part, but that's, you know, absolutely the best way to reach out to customers, that while you keep doing a lot of real-time personalization, you keep acting on the behavior you collect, but you need to also feed that into, let's say, the input part of it, because customer behavior is not linear, right? Like it keeps evolving. And we need to, especially in a subscription model, ensure that we keep acting upon and collecting this data so that we can understand, you know, let's say in Marley Spoon's case, that what was it that made a customer, you know, get their first box? What was it that made them, let's say, stay with the business for, you know, however long they stayed? And when they stopped using the product, what is it that, you know, took to get them back? Because of course we'll keep leveraging those insights into driving better engagement with this customer if you're able to feed this data back into how you're engaging them.
Yeah, absolutely. You make it sound very easy, and I know you've spoken about this framework, which is, I think, like called Unify, Orchestrate, and Personalize. And I think in theory it sounds very basic and, but you know, very nice framework for anyone to orient themselves with, but it's in practice it's so tough to do, right? And I think having done that yourself, I feel that's a very good talent if you can actually follow this framework on how you just described it, right? Especially at Marley Spoon, right? Like it's a subscription business, it's a business where you saw incredible growth in terms of I remember reading 800% growth in the last 5 years, and a lot of it was attributed to how, you know, how you could apply that framework also in the context of CRM, right? So talk about your experience at Marley Spoon, right? Like when you joined the team and to seeing such a hyper growth phase in 5 years, you know, what was your experience like in terms of orienting yourself, and you know, what were some of the things that you had to do to unlock that also for the CRM team when you're looking at this kind of growth at a company?
So I mean, if I look at Marley Spoon, right, so again, this is this business which basically boomed during the pandemic. around the world, right? Like where people, of course, you know, they started using these meal kits and the growth was exponential. And of course, as a business, there was this curve in that growth journey where the growth started tailing down. Mm-hmm. And let's put that in perspective with CRM. So I joined Marley Spoon. It's been close to, 14, 15 months. And when I joined, to me, the CRM team was, more like a printing press, I would say, right? Mm-hmm. And they would basically, they were thought of as a support function where most of the growth was coming from new acquisition, which of course, you know, still is a core growth driver, but CRM was not thought of that, you know, CRM can deliver growth, right? That's the narrative. Personally, I've in the last 14 months that I've been here, I've tried to change, and it's now again especially in this context where you look at, of course, you know, the cookie-less world where media buying is getting more expensive. So it starts with two things. One, of course, you need to and to me that's a continuous process where I have to continuously educate senior leadership here on what CRM is all about, right? Of course, sometimes, you would get this question that, hey, why not spam customers left, right, and center? Mm-hmm. And that is still, sometimes you find that's the mindset about CRM. So mm-hmm. it starts with one, educating, different stakeholders, and then ensuring that you're able to, showcase the value which CRM brings. And the value is not a soft value where it's thinking that, hey, of course, we need to engage with customers. So, of course, there needs to be a CRM team, but basically unlocking the dollar impact that CRM can bring. And at Marley Spoon, so my team, for example, is responsible for a few growth pillars. So one of our core growth pillars is, let's say, reactivation. Again, being a subscription business, customers, of course, would churn. So reactivation is a strong, growth pillar, which my team is responsible for. The second, of course, is then referral, which not only is, a relatively cheaper acquisition channel, but it also is a channel which allows us to, scale the business in a profitable way. And now what we're trying to move towards is, more loyalty on how we can retain our active customers while increasing basket size, upselling, and so on. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of revenue component to this story. And that's basically, what I see now from the organization as well. There's a lot of buy-in from product teams. There's a lot of buy-in from our data teams and so on in supporting the CRM function. Because they can see the dollar impact, which we can bring. And of course, all the time, it's all about, those use cases and ensuring that we can, support this the story in that way. And to me, that is, again, a hard part because it's about getting to this level where you can say that, okay, for any dollar that you spend, whether it's a dollar spent on incentive, whether it's a dollar spent on media, what is the payback? And that profitability on CRM is very high when you compare it to new acquisition. Mm-hmm. But again, I would say that because retaining customers at scale is not as simple, and you have to really, create an architecture where you can unlock this data activation. And that's also basically the infrastructure we built in the last 14 months I was here. And I feel now we're getting to a stage where it's easier to basically showcase uplifts across all our metrics, to test at scale, to basically create this this engine, which can deliver hyper growth from a CRM perspective. But it is work in progress, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are so many interesting themes that you spoke about that I would love to go a bit deep into. For example, one of them being how you were able to, when you walked in, right, it was looked at as a support function, like CRM was a printing press. And I think we spoke about that in terms of what you did at Grover, but at a company like Marley Spoon, where it's more of a subscription, where you are getting similar products, but there's some variety in terms of the meal kits you receive. it's increasingly harder to retain users, and then, you know, win back is a big component of revenue growth as well. Has this been something that you're looking at? Because I feel in the last 3 or 4 years, like post-pandemic, there are some other factors as well, right? Like we're living, there's more privacy concerns, more privacy initiatives, which are making CRM almost this go-to strategic pillar, right? Where you can still have first-party data, you can act on it. And that has led to an incredible growth in terms of how people are looking at CRM. More and more companies are now looking at it from a very holistic perspective, right? You have product teams working very closely with CRM, whereas 5 years ago, that was not so common in terms of like how people were looking at CRM. It was more, you know, from top-bottom approach where people were saying, we need to send this out. There's this new feature coming out. Send out an email to all of our users. Whereas now it's more collaborative as well. So on that theme, right, what are your thoughts as an industry, but also at a company level, you know, how has that transition been so far? Do you see it as an industry trend, or is it something that that every company is doing on its own and is a very individual process in general?
I mean, I would say it is an industry requirement because CRM without product is let's say just sending newsletters left, right, and center and hoping something works. The challenge I still see in the industry is that while organizations see that being core, that there needs to be, let's say, a hardcore, and not just with product, I would say, right? Like there are three key functions that, let's say, CRM always needs to work with. One is, of course, product. The other is data. And the third is, let's say, your content brand, teams for execution. And usually in all my conversations with let's say brands and fellow CRM folks, I often find that there's a huge challenge in working with product teams. And that goes back to, of course, the organization structure, right? Like when you have product and CRM in different functions, it's often hard to align on what should be the priority. This is where you will find that some organizations keep chasing, let's say, so CRM would chase product for unlocking certain infrastructure topics. And then it's always not the most, let's say, scalable way to grow. And I think this part really needs to evolve. And to me, the best example, and that's how I'm also trying to build the team here, comes from one of the conversations I had back in the day with Klarna. And I think the way they build the team is absolutely, to me, an interesting approach. So they look at basically, customer. So they break the team into, let's say, a problem statement and what they call a competency center. So let's say one of your core, let's say, goals as a company is to, again, I'll take a random example, is to increase basket size. Right. And then they would create a competency center around this, let's say, metric. And this and the person leading this competency center would be a CRM manager. And then within this competency center, you would then have, let's say, a product manager. You would have a copywriter. You'll have a UX designer. You would have an analyst and so on. So what it does is it lets, the CRM person basically drive this without necessarily having to get a buy-in from product, without necessarily having to wait for analysis from BI and so on. And to me, this is absolutely the direction which, customer engagement needs to move towards, because you need to break those silos, not just within your data, but it's also about breaking silos within team structures, which sometimes causes, things to not move forward. And that's how, at least I'm also personally trying to build a team here where, it's about getting the right people, of course, with the right skill set, and then in ensuring that how can you more effectively create those, touch points with your product teams, with your data teams, with your content teams, and ensuring those things don't become a blocker. But it is, I think, one of the key things which the industry, I think, is also figuring out where the CRM should sit, whether it's a marketing function, whether it's a product function. And I think the reality is somewhere in between.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I also see the most high performing CRM teams, right? They are usually teams who have very close relationships with product, with data, with tech, and can get things implemented very quickly. And I think that point blends really well into, having a senior leadership buy-in, which of course is influenced by a lot of industrial factors like privacy concerns and things like that. But also from how you position CRM and how you win that battle in terms of communicating to senior leadership that this is a function they need to look into or they need to really use it to drive business impact, be it retention, be it growth, be it revenue, right? Because for example, I'm sure at Marley Spoon, referral is a big deal considering how physical the product is and how the experience is related to eating food, something you typically tend to share very often. So referral is a big acquisition channel, right? And for a lot of folks, that is actually one of the biggest pillars. And see, if you don't do or if you don't even get data in place that it can help you get there, help you promote referrals to users, it acts as an acquisition channel. Of course, retention is a big one. Upselling revenue is so it kind of feeds into all these business impact areas. But how do you, and it's a lot of complaint, right? Like there's a lot of companies who still haven't bridged that gap. That comes also from a perspective that you have the senior leadership, which typically has this acquisition background. And so it's very difficult to make a case for CRM. So how do you tackle that? Or how do you maybe advise folks tackling that in their own companies, right? Like how does someone get the CRM buy-in after they have, let's say, done some initial wins, like what you spoke about at Grover, right? Like where you started doing some tests and seeing some results and that sort of slowly led the path. More from a broader perspective, how do you think someone should tackle this issue?
So, I mean, I would say like it starts. I mean, there's definitely a need to basically educate people, and I think to me that's the key part that as CRM again, I still see that. I mean, even in Marley Spoon, right? That people sometimes, if you ask them what is CRM, they would just say that it's about sending emails. So it, I think there needs to be a consistent effort towards education of what CRM can deliver on. And sometimes, of course, that's the hard part because since you are unlocking so much, let's say, value where you are depending on, of course, your infrastructure, that showcasing the uplift, sometimes it's hard because you need to get a buy-in. So it's like a chicken and egg situation. Where for you to unlock value from CRM, you need to first get this buy-in let's say spending money on tools, spending money on building a team, and then basically in the process nothing happens. So to me, the first step is of course you need to find this, let's say, champion, or you need to find, let's say, an executive buy-in on this ability to, let's say, spend money. I think if you don't have a buy-in, I think that conversation is always hard, right? Like, because you might end up doing something and people will still never let's say agree with spending money on you because they potentially don't see what CRM can do. So to me, the first step is, of course, finding a champion who can basically be the spokesperson within the executive team, whether it's the CMO, whether it's the CPO, whether it's the CEO. So finding a buy-in and then basically, with whatever tech stack you have, doing some quick tests to quickly showcase the result. And usually, when you're starting, let's say, for organizations, they don't have a lot of data. So it's all about starting broad, right? Not letting this decision paralysis come in the way that, sometimes organizations think that, okay, let me collect a lot of data so I can personalize this communication, absolutely in the best way. Chances are it won't happen, right? Because you have to create this feedback loop where you need to test something, right? So imagine again, simple cart abandonment. So I remember when we started with Intercom and with the challenge we had there, we couldn't even showcase the image there. So all we could do was just say, hey, something is left in your cart. We couldn't even, let's say, pull in this information about the product name. And often you will find for a lot of people, they might not even do this because they'll be like, oh, you know what? This is terrible customer experience. And this is a hypothesis, right? And I remember that even when we tested, we could see an uplift. Because for some audiences, intuitively, you would imagine that just sending a reminder that, hey, you have something in your cart is all that they need to convert. And this is exactly what would also get you a buy-in, where with whatever, let's say, limitation you have, if you can start testing, you will start getting insights, which you can then use to further, you know, educate and further get this buy-in. So that those are the two things I would recommend, right? Like continuously invest in education, get this champion who can support, and then, you know, I think those two things will put you in this path where you can, you know, build CRM into this growth engine, which I think it should absolutely be.
Absolutely. I think what you were saying, and, you know, this theme is also something I see with a lot of my clients, right, where you have like this obstruction from some product team or whatever, like teams in general, that CRM channels can disrupt a user flow. And if it's not personalized to the extreme, it's not worth doing because that's just a bad customer experience. But I've had the same experience, like doing something and just that nudge, even if it's not the perfect nudge, let's say, or the most relevant nudge, goes such a long way in creating such quick impact and such quick wins that you're typically better off doing it versus not doing it, especially if you don't have a very big brand equity at stake, right? Like if you don't have something that people are going to talk about and or is going to damage your brand, then it's definitely worth putting out there, and then it becomes a very big channel in no time, right? Similar with subscriptions, actually. You know, I was talking to someone about subscription monetization, and one of the key things that they did to change their, you know, to have the most impact on their business revenue was actually an in-app message that showed them that they had this subscription, which was at a discount or which was at this price. And they had so much fight back in terms of teams that were saying, oh, it's so disruptive to the user that if they're interested in the subscription, they're going to find it. Whereas when they implemented an in-app, which was very basic and just showed them that, hey, by the way, we have this paid feature that you might want to pay for. And that resulted in so much more revenue that they were just laughing about how stupid things can be from that perspective.
I mean, I think that you nailed it, right? So this is where sometimes you need to just have this, let's say, natural bias towards testing, because you talked about this in-app, right? Which is, I think, a classic debatable channel around the world, I feel, where product teams often think it's disruptive. They sometimes, you know, of course, are refusing to support CRM in terms of testing. And I would again always, you know, go with this argument that, you know, test it, right? Like test and see. And of course, you need to have, you know, the right tooling in place where you can have a control group where you can test the uplift. And there you get your, you know, classic answer that what happens if you disrupt this customer's experience? Is it bringing you additional value? Because, of course, it can happen that when you disrupt and it stops them from doing a certain action, that the natural argument that product teams give that, hey, you know, they're not going to convert. But to me, you know, you should have these conversations with the data in mind in running these tests and then figuring out that, you know, whether this caused an uplift, whether it caused churn, whether it caused a drop in conversion. But all these conversations without testing is just, you know, a hypothetical conversation where the person who speaks the loudest usually wins. And my suggestion always is to, you know, just err on the side of testing and then let data, you know, dictate what needs to be done.
Absolutely. I have had the best experience working with folks who actually have that mindset. I remember having this head of growth who used to tell me, don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. So you should do things, and then if it doesn't work, ask for forgiveness, and that's a lot better than asking for permission.
I tell my team this every day, right? Like every day when I talk to them, I'm like, you know what, when they have a question, oh, what would happen if we test this, if we send this SMS, if we send this direct mail, and I tell them exactly this, that test, you know, if this doesn't work out, we'll say, oh, you know, it didn't work out. But the only way to know is by testing. And it's also about thinking the opposite, right? Like it's a huge opportunity loss where if you don't test and you realize that, you know, you might have a huge uplift by, let's say, just sending a simple reminder through SMS, for example, where sometimes, again, you know, with different channels, you have different connotations. With SMS, for example, there's this huge industry mindset. It's a very, you know, I don't know, negative channel where you're, it's too much in the face. You should not send SMS. And in our case at Malajpoon, I'll tell you, like, this was one of the simple things we did, which created a huge uplift, was just sending a simple SMS reminder. And there was a huge inertia behind doing this because, of course, someone might have thought that, hey, you know, this is like a totally disruptive channel, and bring this personal bias in where they would say that, hey, you know, I personally don't like receiving SMS. And I think as CRM marketeers, we need to take this personal bias out of the way and always are on the side of testing, and then let data again, you know, dictate what should be done and what not.
Definitely. I can't agree more, because I've seen so many, especially when you're dealing, I mean, it's a gross simplification, but especially when you're working with engineers or people who have deep engineering expertise or experience, I find them the hardest to convince, because they are typically the folks who are very direct and they feel like people will want to do things if they know how to do it. And, you know, and I always tell them that psychology is a bit more dense than just a very simple do. Like if you know something, you just do. Otherwise, we'll all be very fit and we'll all be very eating always healthy. There will be no junk food in the world, right? Like, and that's the majority. So that should tell you something about how people are different than just a very simple linear mindset. Cool, man. It's been amazing talking to you. I just have this one topic that I'd love to get your take on. And I know we have, you know, we're 10 minutes short of an hour, but maybe we can talk about it a little bit and get your perspective on it. It's just team structures. You know, I've been in this space for some time now, and I feel like the team structures over the last 5 years have been very, very different and across all companies. Like, and I've never been able to put a finger on what the team structures, you know, what the common team structures are within CRM. And also just some thoughts around how they should be in an ideal world, right? What's your take on it? Because I remember reading somewhere while researching you, and I might be wrong about this, but like building the wrong team structure has infinite opportunity costs versus building the right team structure giving you great superpowers. It was one of the quotes that I noted down for this conversation, and I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on it? You know, like, how do you look at team structures, and maybe what are some of the common pieces of the puzzle that you maybe recommend folks who are in that position to think about when they're looking at this?
So I think like the best metaphor which comes to my mind is that if you put a frog on the top of a tree and ask the frog to fly, the frog will feel stupid. So it's I think it goes back to CRM as well, right? Because it's such a dynamic ecosystem that you can intuitively imagine that not everyone would have the right skill set, right? So of course, if you just, you know, get people in and build a huge team and expect a lot out of them, right? Like expect the CRM manager to be great at, let's say, execution, to be great at understanding how different channels work, to be able to test, to be able to look at data and analyze and figure out what the right segmentation is, to be great at, let's say, marketing tech in general and understanding how different tools work with each other. It's a recipe for disaster, because there is absolutely, I mean, I'm sure there's a unicorn like that which exists, but chances are you'll not find that unicorn. And to me, then it's about, again, thinking about, you know, what the right balance is and ensuring that you're able to build a team where you plug all of these different gaps. And to me, that is, you know, also how, you know, I went about building this team at Marley Spoon, that while it's absolutely critical to have a vertical focus where, you know, there's a team focusing on one part of the customer journey so that we are agile in terms of execution. But then we started building horizontal layers from two perspectives, right? So one, to ensure that there are no silos between these verticals, that if a person is focusing on reactivation, they also understand how, let's say, the active customer journey is. Because if they don't have that view, then, of course, how will they reactivate customers? And the second part of this is that what I mentioned, right? Like, so now we have people focusing on a horizontal layer. So things around data, right? We have a data lead to give this data governance, to give this you know, data support to these CRM managers who are great at execution, who are great at understanding, you know, how different channels work, but need that support and need that guidance in terms of how best to analyze numbers. Similarly, we have a tech lead who works with all our, let's say, complex tech stack, whether it's a CDP, whether it's a behavioral intelligence platform, whether it's a template builder. Since there's so many technicalities and so much, let's say, things you need to keep to be mindful of, that it gives also a CRM manager the technical support they need in order to ensure that they are, you know, focusing on what they do best, right? So they're not too too involved in, okay, you know, this event is not firing, and they might not, you know, even know how to go debug that problem. So to me, it again, you know, the critical part is, of course, understanding what your, what the strength of your team is, and ensuring that you're enabling them in the right direction, but not, again, going back to that frog on top of the tree problem, and ensuring that you're not putting them in a spot where they are destined to fail. And I think that part is, I feel, the most critical piece in CRM, especially since it's such a dynamic function made of such, let's say, different skill sets that you need to succeed.
Absolutely. I think there's also like so much depth in that, right? In terms of how you can evolve your team structures, because also I feel the tech stack, or the evolving tech stack, is also getting more and more complex, so to say. Compared to what it was a few years ago, that you almost need some level of technical knowledge. Like, this is something I've been seeing in the industry for a while now, that there is some sort of tech, you know, background that always helps for you to be a good part of a CRM team, which earlier was very content driven, right? It was very, are you good at understanding what customer needs? Can you think it? Think of things from a customer perspective and maybe write copy and things like that. Whereas now maybe there's more of, can you actually go into Amplitude, make some quick cohorts, understand what's impacting retention, come up with hypotheses. You know, it's gearing to more towards that. And I feel it's a very interesting space that we are in right now.
Absolutely. So, and I think, like, just one last thing from my side. So what is also adding complexity to this, I feel, is all these vendors that we keep talking about, right? Whether it's Amplitude, Braze, you know, Segment and Particle. I mean, they're strong products, are really powerful in terms of what they deliver, but they add another layer of complexity for a CRM manager, because nothing is plug and play, right? Like, of course, they would, you know, position themselves saying that, okay, you know, everything works. You just plug and play into your tech stack. And if you don't understand, and this is where the complexity comes in, and this is also, you know, one thing which I feel CRM teams need to be mindful of, in ensuring that they don't see it as a plug and play solution, because chances are that you would have to you know, look at your own use cases and then figure out how these systems add value, and simultaneously in that process ensure you have the right teams to get you up to speed. Otherwise, if you fall into this pitfall of plug and play ecosystem, which is basically, you know, what is happening in this marketing tech landscape, then chances are, once you get these, let's say, really complex systems in, you might not be able to unlock value out of that, which becomes, yeah, again, you know, a huge pitfall in its own way.
Yeah, absolutely. I was at a conference just yesterday, and I can't tell you how, I think that is almost all vendor that I met in this conference, that it's a plug and play. You just need 10 minutes to implement it and you will have insights on at your fingertips. And to your point, right, like, yes, you have them at your fingertips, but then you just have like so many things at your fingertips that at some point, if something breaks, you have so many things to look into that it's typically better to start from the end, right, and saying, what do I need to get there, to get whatever, to whatever aim I have, and then saying, okay, this is the only things I need, compared to going all out and then just generating so many insights that you're just running confused as a team all the time. Very cool, man. I really enjoyed talking with you. And we are just like 2 minutes short of an hour, but anything else you would like to add? Where could people reach out to you if they wanted to, you know, maybe follow you or talk to you?
I mean, I'm one of those, let's say, people who's hardly on social media. The only platform I do use is LinkedIn. So for anyone who's listening and who wants to just bounce off ideas, of course, you know, just feel free to drop me a note on LinkedIn. I'm happy to add value in any way.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Karan, again. And it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I'm kind of confused about what I should be naming this episode in my head, because we spoke about so many cool things. But no, again, a big thank you for being here.
Likewise, the pleasure was all mine.
Thank you.